It's Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. More than a third of American children are growing up in homes without fathers. That number is even higher for kids in poor urban families. Two scholars at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health have spent years looking behind those numbers to the people who live them. Catherine Eden is a noted poverty researcher and professor of sociology, and Timothy Nelson is a research associate. They're also married and moved with their children to Camden, New Jersey, to observe how its inner-city families function. The result is the book they wrote together, Doing the Best I Can, Fatherhood in the Inner City. When they came to our studios in April, I began by asking Catherine Eden what ideas about urban fatherhood she was trying to understand that she didn't think had been accurately captured.
I had been studying single mothers for most of my career. And my colleagues kept saying, you have to study the dads. And I would say, I don't want to study the dads. I know everything there is to know about dads from the moms. And Tim and others persuaded me that this was a good idea. And I really bought, sort of the conventional line about fathers back then, that they were sort of love 'em and leave 'em guys. They were really interested in sex and not fatherhood, and that at the first announcement of a pregnancy, they would leave the mom holding the diaper bags. So Tim and I began, we moved to Camden with our family to do the study. And when we began actually spending time with low-income men, what we uncovered was this profound sense that children brought meaning and identity to men, and that men really had a thirst to be fathers and to be generative. So this was a big surprise.
As you mentioned, you moved to Camden, New Jersey, which you identify as the poorest city in the U.S. You are not only a married couple, you are raising kids, you're adopted kids. And so I ask this in the most literal sense possible. What were you thinking? No, seriously, walk us through the decision.
Yeah. So, my mentor, Christopher Jenks, and my former dean at Harvard, David Elwood, used to say that the spread of single parenthood was the biggest demographic mystery of the last half of the 20th century. Lots of people had tried to figure it out, right? Why do low-income young people have children they can't afford early in the life course and without being married? And so we kind of figured we'd have to do this in a serious way. If we were going to figure out this mystery, we really had to expose ourselves to some of the same conditions that the men were under. I don't know why we did it. I mean, we had this, at that time we had a 3-year-old, and then we adopted a 2-year-old, and our daughters experienced this with us. But it was kind of a remarkable experience. I'm not sure if we hadn't done it, whether we would have really understood how men could conceive of an unplanned pregnancy as such an opportunity for generativity and rebirth. I'm not sure that we would have believed it.
How can you be sure people were telling you the truth?
Well, it's part of what we do when we go in and try to have more naturalistic conversations with people. And we ask them about the entirety of their lives, what it was like for them growing up, walking us through each of the significant relationships that they've had, all their job histories, all kinds of things. And one thing that struck me right away was how open people were in terms of just telling you things about their lives upon first meeting you that was really not trying to cast them in a good light. In fact, some of the things they told me were rather shocking.
Such as?
For example, one man, 5 minutes into the interview, before I even had a chance to really get into the interview, had told me that he was HIV positive, that he had never told anyone in his family. It almost became sometimes like I was a priest hearing some of their darkest secrets. And part of that is because they know that I'm here to listen, that their identities are protected, and that I don't know anyone in their network. So they often really don't have friends or anyone that they can really confide in. So the interview becomes an opportunity for them to really unburden themselves of a lot of the things that they carry around.
How are the circumstances in which men become fathers in poor neighborhoods different than more affluent men?
Well, it's like turning the world upside down. So the typical sequence of events is a young man and a young woman start talking to each other or socializing. And then about 6 to 7 months later, you get the first pregnancy leading to a live birth. So it's almost like relationships on steroids. It's very, very rapid. And the most important thing to know is that the couple is often usually not together at the time. They don't consider themselves to be in a real relationship. At the time they conceive. But the moment the woman tells the man, I'm pregnant, we see that relationship begin to form. The couple tries desperately to, quote, get it together for the sake of the baby. And what's really surprising about this story is that in 7 cases out of 10, when men hear this news, now remember the conventional wisdom is that the men don't want to be parents. Men hear this news, they respond with happiness and even outright joy. One young 17-year-old father, Andre Green, we write about, is told by his aunt that he's going to become a father with a woman he's already broken up with. And he tells the story of how he, you know, play acts to her that he's angry. He stomps up the stairs muttering to himself, oh man, what am I going to do? He gets to his bedroom and he slams the door and looks around to make sure no one else is around and then begins shouting, thank you, Jesus, and dancing around the room. Now, Andre and we were neighbors, I didn't understand what Andre meant until we had spent a year in the same neighborhood he did, a year of incredible violence. There were 3 murders on the block where we were living and around the corner from where Andre was, all kinds of other violence. And at the end of that year, a young lady, LaCondia Catlett at a local middle school, wrote the prize-winning essay for the Stop the Violence contest that a local TV show sponsored. And it went something like this. Every day I hear about something in my city, some incidents of violence, you know, someone getting killed or hurt, and it hurts me to see my city portrayed in that way. And she ends her essay with the following words, put down the guns and pick up the babies. And when I read those words, I understand suddenly why Andre Green says, thank you, Jesus. And, you know, he takes us into that emotion and tells us how his father abandoned him when he was young, had children with women that Andre didn't even know about, and how pained he is, really, by his father's behavior. And so this announcement, your girlfriend's pregnant, you know, it just elicits this strong feeling of, I've got a chance to do for someone else what I didn't get. I have a chance to give in a way that I didn't receive.
On Maryland Morning on WYPR, I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Timothy Nelson, research associate at the Bloomberg School of Public Health, and his co-author, Catherine Eden. She's a noted poverty researcher and distinguished professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. We're talking about their book, the book they researched and wrote together, Doing the Best I Can, Fatherhood in the Inner City. As part of our year-long series about inequality in the region, the lines between us, we spoke with Joe Jones, founder of the Center for Urban Families here in Baltimore. Here's what he told us.
We have a significant percentage of men in Baltimore City, and this is just a microcosm of what happens around the country, of men who have somehow become dads, and they don't know how to be a dad.
How do they pick up how to be a dad? How do they try to answer that question for themselves?
They often don't have role models in their immediate connections. And this very, I should say that we interviewed about equal numbers of white and African-American fathers. The African-American fathers were more likely to not have had a father who was present in their own household growing up, but they did have uncles and older cousins and, you know, some other father figure many times who they would look up to. But there's also, part of what we write about in the book is kind of a shift in the meaning of fatherhood for these fathers. They really don't want to be the old style of father who would just, you know, bring home the bacon and then, you know, bury his head in the newspaper and not talk to them. So, and some of the fathers had fathers like that, and they said, you know, even though he was a good breadwinner, I don't consider him a good father because he never talked to us. He never would relate to us in a particular emotional kind of way. And for these men, this is what they really want to do with their children. They want to establish bonds of affection and openness, in some ways to be the traditional idea of what a mother is.
Well, Catherine Eden, do the men that you spoke with see their children very often? Are they
involved? See their children. So, well, it's a mixed story. Okay, so if you take any given child, 80% of the time, 85% of the time, when that child is born outside of marriage, the mom and the dad have figured out a way to get it together, and they're in a relationship. And they'll usually tell you at the hospital that they're planning on getting married. So very high hopes when this child is born. This couple really does want to coalesce around this unplanned pregnancy. A year later, half have broken up. And by 5 years, only about 30% are still together. But the fathers are fairly intensively engaged 60% of the time. Now, after that point, there are just all kinds of things that go wrong. Incarceration, joblessness, the mother moving away. She takes on a new partner and suddenly it's inconvenient to have him visit. Or his visit sparks sexual jealousy. That's a very common theme. So men end up accomplishing fatherhood across children. What we see when we look at a father's fathering over his early life course is that he's usually fathering at least one child intensively, several times weekly, at any given time. About 85% of these men are fathering somebody. But it's very complicated when you have children across multiple partnerships to evenly distribute your fathering time. So some kids are the winners, and other kids really lose out.
So, Timothy, these family structures are very different than the traditional one we think of. What kinds of issues does that create for kids?
Just in terms of logistics, of figuring out who's going to get the limited paycheck now on the father's perspective. Is it the biological children who are now living with a new family situation, or is it your new biological children and your children that you have sort of a social father relationship with from your new partner? And so these are the kinds of things that that really introduce problems and complexity that most, I guess, the traditional middle-class family has not had to deal with.
And you said you studied both white and African-American
families.
That's
right.
Do they tend to deal with these challenges differently? Are there patterns that are different according to race?
You know, one difference between blacks and whites is that we have much stronger sort of prejudices against black than white fathers. And when you know, black fathers, I think, have to work harder to sort of distance themselves from the role of the love them and leave them guy. If you look nationally at nationally representative data and you control for economic factors, black men are more likely, not less likely, to be involved with their non-custodial children. So there's a strong thread emerging in the black community that, which we see in Camden, especially now, that you really need to step up to your responsibility, and that part of being a man is being a dad.
That's Catherine Eden here on Maryland Morning, WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. She is a noted poverty researcher and distinguished professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Also here is Timothy Nelson, a research associate at the Bloomberg School. And we're talking about the book they researched and wrote together, Doing the Best I Can, Fatherhood in the Inner City. You write that about 40% of American children in 2008 were born outside marriage, and a disproportionate number of those kids are poor and minority. You are both researchers, not policymakers, but let me put this question to you anyway. How do we change that statistic, that outside of marriage statistic? Or is it important to change it?
So I think what has really changed is the meaning of marriage. Culture-wise, you know, we tend to think of poor people as sort of having a different culture than middle-class people. And what we really argue is that everyone is responding to the same change in the cultural meaning of marriage. You know, the big wedding is back among the middle class, and middle class people are waiting longer and longer to get married. They're finding the perfect match. They're marrying people much more like themselves educationally. So we've kind of upped the ante culturally with regard to marriage. We want a soulmate. We want, you know, sort of the ultimate relationship. And we think it takes a lot of money. We don't respect the idea of a poor but happy marriage. So what the middle class does, the poor often emulate. And, you know, these men, it's so interesting. They're so tied to the notion that maybe someday they'll marry. But when they talk about their marital partners, they really talk about the soulmate, you know, the love of their life, who will stick by them no matter what, and who they can really, really trust. And unfortunately, oftentimes, that's not their child's mother. It may be, but because they don't really choose, in some ways, their children's mothers, these are accidental relationships, shotgun relationships, it's just not very likely that the love of your life is going to emerge from a happenstance relationship.
So does it follow from that that society needs to do a workaround and separate out and just not worry about kids being born outside of marriage?
You know, I don't think so. Most poor folks want to get married. It's kind of an overriding cultural goal. We know that when couples achieve a modest degree of financial stability in the months after their children are born, they're much more likely to marry. Economic stability is really important to marriage. And to the extent that we can help young families find economic stability very early in that child's life, we increase the chances of marriage a lot.
And I should point out that nobody wants to do family this way. This is not the ideal situation. None of these fathers thought to themselves, I want to be having children across multiple partners and multiple households. When we interviewed them about sort of what's the ideal time to have a child, what's the ideal time to get married, they sound very much like, as Kathy was saying, middle class people. They would say, well, you should finish school. You should be firmly established in your job or career. Then you should get married, and then you should have children. Oh, and by the way, I didn't do any of those things because of my circumstances or my background or whatever. But that's the ideal. That's the ideal that I hold to. And things just didn't happen that way. And they often feel a lot of sometimes shame, lots of regret, you know, lots of pain around the times that they haven't been there for their own children or the relationships that they've seemed that they've screwed up. So nobody sets out to do family this way, but they often feel like they just don't have the resources or the support to be able to do it so the quote-unquote right way.
Yeah, and they're not really, you know, when faced with the choice of never being able to do it the right way or doing it the wrong way, they think having kids is more important than not having them.
Thank you for this book, and thanks for talking to us about it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our pleasure.
Catherine Eden is a noted poverty researcher and professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. Timothy Nelson is a research associate also at the Bloomberg School of Public Health. They're co-authors of the book, Doing the Best I Can, Fatherhood in the Inner City. We've got more information about the book at our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Also there, a link to the Father's Day Baltimore Father and Son Celebration Concert at Andy Musique in Baltimore, Sunday at 8 p.m. I'm Sheila Cast. After a break on Maryland Morning, The Secret Life of Plants. Stay with us on 88.1.